Welcome to 500 Words Lessons on Writing. This is Katrina Lee. This podcast explores the triumphs and tragedies of 10 years as a published author. A couple of quick shout-outs before we get into the interview for today. First of all, my aunt informed me that there's a bit of a pause in the podcast after the music, and sometimes she thinks she's being disconnected, and I'm sure many of the rest of you have noticed that too. We don't know how to fix it at this point, but hopefully we will be able to do that. And by we fixing it, I mean my husband. Secondly, Louisa Miller encouraged me at prayer meeting on Tuesday night. In fact, she told me that by listening to the podcast, she found out there was prayer meeting or was reminded. So I appreciate your encouragement, Louisa. And also Brad Mast as well said that he was blessed by several of the podcasts. And thank you for that encouragement, Brad. Also got a piece of snail mail from my friend Sheila, whose daughter Hannah, Sheila says she listened to my podcast on Saturday, and she also included a book report from her daughter Hannah on Captain Garrison. I love getting book reports from readers, either by email or by snail mail. That's really special. On to today's topic, and I'm going to introduce it a little bit, and then we'll go to Deborah's interview, and then as you'll see, I'll wrap it up with something else that I asked Deborah later, and with the trivia and so forth. So, how's this for a review on Goodreads about a book you've written? And this is real. I just copied it off of Goodreads yesterday. It's about Inferno in the Lost Pines, the book I wrote about the wildfires in Texas. And here's what she says. I honestly hated it. The writing was meh, bland, and boring, mostly. But what really got me was the message. Like, what? If God sets your house on fire, you thank him for sparing your life? What the hell? 100 out of 10 would never recommend, ever. This kind of crazy is why I'm an atheist. Before we get into the story of Deborah, to which I'm sure she is alluding here, let me just share a few observations about writing Inferno. And by the way, I'm really not that offended by this review. I am sad she thinks my writing is boring, although she does qualify it by saying mostly. But the rest of her review makes me feel that I actually accomplished my mission fairly well. And I think if I would have mocked Deborah's faith in God, she might not have thought my writing was quite as boring and given higher marks as well. But here are a couple of quick observations about writing Inferno. First, never assume that officials will be helpful as sources in your writing. I managed to score an interview with one of the most important people in Bastrop after the wildfires, and I was very eager about talking with this person. To my great disappointment, the person's answers helped me less than many of the eyewitnesses on the highways and byways of Bastrop. And now I do understand that public figures and politicians have to be on their guard, and they have privacy rules to follow. Sometimes they simply are not legally allowed to talk. But I'm just saying, given the choice, I'll take the homeless man sleeping on the street as an eyewitness before a public figure any day. And I found this out with the tornado book as well. Second, if you find a voice that fits your project perfectly, clear your schedule and listen. And sometimes you have your kind of plan mapped out and you think you're going to go from this person to this person to this person. Deborah made Inferno in the Lost Pines something greater than a fire chronicle. She had not been a Christian many years at the time of the fire. She had been raised in a Catholic home, and she turned away from God and got into the occult. She was a self-proclaimed witch and owned a shop in Austin where she sold upside-down crosses as well as herbs, crystals, and Wiccan stars. And as I began to listen to her story and her time of coming through the fire, I realized that this voice fit perfectly with the story that I wanted to write, as evidenced by the review from the atheists. And number three, look for symbols in the history and geography of a setting. This is a little bit different track, but I loved finding that Bastrop has had a history of surviving catastrophes since 1832. And even the loblolly pines of Bastrop had survived the odds for many years, miles away from the main forest. And so I have included that in the story of the fire in Bastrop. Deborah Palo is an English teacher and homeschool teacher who has created her own English curriculum. Check it out at palosenglish.com. And here's the description on her website about herself. Deborah Palo loves her Lord, loves her subject, and loves her students. A Plan 2 graduate from the University of Texas at Austin, Mrs. Palo has enjoyed over 20 years in private classroom education, ranging from preschool to high school. Most of these years, she traveled to one-day academy campuses across Central Texas, serving as lead teacher, English department chair, and curriculum provider. I don't have time to tell you all the details about how Deborah went from running an occult shop to serving the Lord. That's all in Inferno and the Lost Pines. But as you can tell from the Atheist review, her story alone makes Inferno in the Lost Pines worth reading. Despite the loss of her home in a wildfire and the more recent tragic loss of her husband, Deborah's faith in God inspires and challenges, unless perhaps you don't believe that God exists. So now let's go straight to the interview with Deborah. And keep in mind, I did try to cut a few extra pieces of conversation to keep this short. So we're talking a little bit about quarantine and lockdown at the beginning, and it might not sound completely smooth because I cut out a few things. So here's the interview.
Hello.
Hello, Deborah. This is Katrina.
Hi, Katrina. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Just looking at your website here, and I see it says you're doing some free classes right now?
Yes, we're offering the videos for Paulo's English for free for anyone who is finishing up the school year, you know, in any of the schools that we service, so that they can finish out the school year online.
Wow. That's really nice of you.
Our governor just came out with that a couple of days ago, so everybody's, kind of like those dogs looking out the window going, when do we get to go outside?
Yeah. That's a great analogy.
Right?
That brings me to the point of the conversation, and that is that I'm doing a little kind of 10-year review of some of the different books I've written and things like that, and lessons that I've learned along the way, and I think what really sticks out to me with Inferno and the Lost Pines is finding a person with a really good voice, because I did talk to a lot of different people, and it just makes a huge difference who's telling the story. And, I found people who were really bitter about what had happened, and I know you went through a lot of hard times, but yet just your voice of explaining what had happened was so refreshing and just really made that book, I think.
Thank you. Praise God.
Yeah, and bringing glory to God through it as well was
just so meaningful
to me. But, yeah.
It's funny, whenever anybody asks me, what did you learn from the fire? I think I came away with three big things, and it's three things that I think are rooted so deep in my heart that now anything that happens has to go through these three little filters first. I think the first one was that God is sovereign. Like, he didn't wake up that morning and go, oh my goodness, fire's in Bastrop, what am I going to do? I mean, he was absolutely in control and aware, never once did anything take him off guard. And so,
not even a pandemic, right?
Yeah, I find great comfort in the sovereignty of God. I really do. I might not understand it, but yet it comforts me. And so that was the first thing, is that he's absolutely sovereign. Mm-hmm. But then the next thing is that he's absolutely good. Mm. I mean, that in no way, shape, or form is this or was like losing my house a punishment. It may have been an inconvenience, and it was definitely a shock, but it wasn't a punishment. So therefore, there was nothing to really feel guilty or bitter about, right? So 100% sovereign, 100% good, and he 100% loves me. Like, he knows my name, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't just, a number, and think about the pandemic and the numbers out there. We see numbers, he sees people,
right?
He sees people whom he loves dearly. He knows their histories and their stories, and so nothing is done with half a heart. Everything he has done is with complete love and care, and that he's working things out so precisely for his glory, but also for our good.
Wow.
And so everything kind of goes through that filter, right?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, that's such a neat thing to hear you say, knowing that your husband passed away not too long ago. How long has that been?
It's been a little over 18 months.
It's amazing to, yeah.
It had to go through the same filter, yeah, right?
I'm sure.
And of course, it's kind of funny. I was thinking about that Dean's death, actually, it rocked me so much deeper and so much harder than the fire did.
I can see, yeah.
Just because it hits you in the heart. Because your house is your stuff.
Right.
It's your history. It's, you know, sentimentality in a lot of ways. But when you're talking about your husband, you know, right, the one where you had these dreams and visions of growing old together and rocking on the back porch, and when it's gone.
Wow.
You know, that's when you come face to face with the Lord. And you know what? What it came down to was the same thing that I learned with the house. Dean didn't belong to me. He didn't belong to me. Like, the house didn't belong to me. Neither did Dean, but he was so much more loved and cherished by God. And Dean belongs to him. And boy, I'll tell you what, it sounds really nice to say it now. There was a lot of months where you're just struggling with that, like, oh, this hurts so much. I can't believe.
I can't imagine. Wow.
Yeah, but he's so good. He's so good through everything. And he can handle my tears, and he can handle and there were those points in there where you do feel a little bit of despair. Like, I'm not quite sure if this is going to go on for the next 20 years, Lord.
Right.
Like, I'm not really feeling this right now.
Right.
You know, but he can handle me. Right.
Right.
He can handle my ups and my downs. And, you know, I take such solace, such comfort,
right,
in just knowing, yeah, that no matter what flies my way, he is sovereign, he's good, and he loves me, and I'm clinging, Katrina, I'm telling you, every day, clinging.
I hear you. What a great encouragement. And at the time of the fire, you were kind of a new Christian, or not? I'm trying to remember how much time had passed since you had actually come to Christ in 2011.
Right. Georgia was, oh my gosh, it's been kind of legal.
Okay.
But comparatively speaking, it was a relatively short period of time, because I had grown up in the Catholic Church, but I didn't really understand Christ. And so it made it so easy to kind of fall away and get off into what it was I eventually got off into, which was the occult. And so
coming back as
an adult, it was that ripping out of the faulty wiring, you know, and all the misconceptions and the lies and the half-truths and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Lord brought me through that before the fire.
Wow.
And so that was absolutely divine.
A foundation for you.
Yeah.
But then it sounds like what you're saying is the fire sort of clarified for you what you really believed about God, almost? Or was that part of what it was?
I would say that. I think what I've learned since then is that we have emotions, and God seeks to mature us through our emotions, but the enemy likes to use them to manipulate us and keep us stuck. And so it's so easy when you've got a traumatic experience like the death of a loved one or a fire or something like that, it's so easy to follow our flesh right into that emotional sticking point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so instead, to be able to say, this is you. It doesn't look like you or feel like you, because it doesn't feel good, but that doesn't mean it's no less you,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so to trust, to have that level of trust, like, you gave us the house, Lord, and you took it away.
Mm-hmm.
Blessed be the name of the Lord, you know?
Wow.
I mean, just like Job, naked I came into the world, naked I go.
Right.
Blessed be the name of the Lord. I mean, Job went through it.
He did.
Yeah.
Now, that brings the giving and taking away, brings me to the question of, you did actually save a few possessions from from the house after the fire? Or what was there anything in particular that you still have that you managed?
Two of them, two things in particular really mean a lot to me. And the first one is still in my front yard. Okay. And it was the very first thing that the team pulled out of the rubble when we were kind of shifting and looking for anything that was left behind. The very first thing that they pulled out was a piece of art that one of my students had made for me. His dad was a metal worker, and so they made this beautiful cross with kind of like a mosaic, you know, a circular mosaic of pieces behind the cross that kind of, it looked like a swirling storm. And they had polished it so brilliantly that it shone blue. It was so gorgeous. And the student gave it to me in a beautiful pink box with a big ribbon. And he when I opened it up, he said, "Mrs. Paulo, we call this piece the Eye of the Storm. Because no matter what swirls around in the background, as long as you keep your eyes on Jesus, you're going to be okay."
Oh, wow.
I was like, that's beautiful. So I put it in my living room. Right? It was so beautiful. It earned that honored space on the wall in my living room. And then the fire, of course, like, you know, comes through, destroys everything. And the first thing that they pull out of the fire is that cross. Wow. Some of the little storm pieces from the back had fallen off, but it was unmistakably that cross. And so when they gave it to me, I stuck it in a burned out stump in the front yard. And it stayed there for years until the stump wore away. The stump isn't there anymore. So I hung it on a tree, but it's still in the front yard.
That,
right?
I think I saw it there in the stump. Now that you say it, I would have almost forgotten that. But okay.
It was in the stump. So that was the first thing, and we kept that still in the front yard. The second thing was when we came and we looked at the property for the first time. When we first laid our eyes on the property for the first time, we had a feeling that the house was gone, but we didn't really know.
Okay.
Until we drove up, and our house is kind of at an incline. So from the road, you can't see whether it's there or not. Mm-hmm. So while we're driving up, we're thinking, oh, maybe it's there, maybe it's there. And then when we get to the top of the street, we look down and it's completely gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nothing but just twisted wreckage and kind of looked like a war zone. You know, like those old World War II movies that's all gray and there's nothing but black marge, sticks and ash everywhere.
Wow.
And so that's what we saw. We got out of the car and walked down there. And upon further investigation, all of the pine trees were burned. Like, I think we lost 80 pine trees on our one little 1 acre lot. But I know, crazy, huh? And then the house was completely destroyed. I mean, metal twisted up like pipe cleaners. But there was one thing that caught my eye, and it was this tiny little oak tree. I mean, tiny compared to the great mighty pines, right?
Mm-hmm.
This tiny little oak tree that was about 20 feet from our back door. The oak tree is fine. The oak tree still has green leaves on it, which is kind of crazy.
Wow.
And then hanging from the little oak tree is the kid's pickle swing. Now, I say this as people don't know what a pickle swing is. I wouldn't have either. But it was my husband's. When he was 3 years old, he saw it on TV. You know, this little big, it was like a big pickle. It just says Heinz, like, you know, it's in there. It's a big, hard plastic pickle with holes in it. And you string it up to a tree, and it's a swing. The pickle swing was still there, hanging by the cheap little yellow nylon rope. You know, it's a plastic pickle.
Like, how much heat?
Yeah. And then 20 feet from the back door, you know, is this tree. But, I mean, 20 feet away, everything is totally melted. I mean, we're talking 2,000 degree heat, right?
Yeah.
Melts the house, but doesn't touch the pickle
My word. Or even that nylon. I would think at some point nylon would just melt.
It would just, like, go. I mean,
I don't know the degree chemistry,
heat,
but
there's no explanation. There's no earthly explanation
as
to why that tree still stood there and why the pickle swing was there. And so I remember sitting there looking at it, and I almost started, like, laughing, like, really, Lord? You saved the pickle? You know? Wow. Okay.
Nice to know what's important or something, right?
Yeah, right. And then, you know, kind of like, and when you're quiet, you kind of hear that, oh, and it was so quiet. Like, there, we couldn't hear, there were no bug sounds, there were no bird sounds. It was so eerie quiet. Mm. And in the eerie quiet, I hear him kind of like speak to my spirit and say, well, Deborah, if I could spare a plastic pickle, do you think I could have spared the house if I wanted to?
Right.
But if I really wanted to, you know, I've shown you that I could spare even the most vulnerable little thing. Do you think I could have spared the house if I wanted to?
Wow.
And I was like, yeah. Yeah, you could. And so this was him saying the house had to go. Mm-hmm. I know you don't understand it. I know this is a shock. I get it, but the house had to go.
Well, and that he's sovereign, so that too, point, which goes with your...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at that point, you just go, okay. You know, it was yours to begin with. Mm-hmm. You took it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, you know, not knowing at that time that within like six, seven months, he was going to send Christian Aid Ministries to rebuild a actual in-the-ground foundation house.
Right.
On this property. Right?
Right.
I mean, he's just like, trust me, it had to go.
Hmm.
It's like, oh, well. I mean, you know, he's so good. He's so good. Mm-hmm. We just have to hold on. Mm-hmm. We have to hold on. And he will show exactly how good he is.
Wow.
And so, I mean, it's just a... Oh, and, you know, kind of a cool thing. I now have two little grandbabies because my son is going to get married this month to a woman who has two little, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and we're going to hang the pickle swing in the yard again by that same tree.
Oh, wow.
So, I know. Wow. I'm so excited.
Got someone to use it again. That's awesome.
So it's like three generations get to use the swing, and my tree is still beautiful. I'm looking at it right now. It's just... Every single year when it comes back, I'm like, thank you, Lord. Thank you for sparing my little tree. I love my tree so much.
Yeah. Wow.
I just look at it, and it's this constant.
What a great gift from God.
Oh, I know.
And
I know.
There's something about getting a gift like that that wasn't an essential piece of survival that makes it almost special. Like, I just knew you needed a little extra or something. Wow.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
good.
What would you say was kind of your worst moment through that time?
I think the worst moment was probably right after the shock of having to evacuate.
Okay.
Right? Because that was, I mean, it was, I'm sure that when we, I know that when I was packing up, I was totally thinking we were coming back home.
Right.
You know, I didn't even, you know, cross my mind that we weren't going to come back home. But then we were evacuated, maybe about 10 miles away to the Page Community Center. And then when the fire got, you know, spread even more, we had to be evacuated from there and
move
further out.
Wow.
And so I think after the second move further out, and we saw the smoke cloud getting so much wider, so much higher, that at that point, you know, you start to feel that, whoa, this is worse than we thought.
Mm.
And so that next morning, we evacuated out to Lexington, you know, much further away, staying out there with some friends. I woke up early in the morning, and usually I like to go for walks. So I woke up early, and I go for this walk in a neighborhood I'm not familiar with, and I can still see the smoke cloud, even from all those miles away. I can still see the smoke cloud in the distance as I'm walking, and I'm praying, and I'm talking to him, and I get to this little kind of a muddy pond, and I just sit down, and I just start crying. All of the anxiety, all of the fear,
tension.
All of the, you know, like trying to keep your family together and keep them okay, but you're not feeling all that okay yourself.
Right.
And I just laid it all out there, like crying audibly. And like, it was like that same quiet voice that speaks and says, "Yo, I have this. I've got this." Right?
Wow.
That the house is in my hands. Trust me. I've got this. And so it was after, you know, I came back from my walk. It was after that that my husband was on the phone with someone who was fighting the fire from inside the burn area line.
Right.
And he saw the smoke and the fire approaching my house, and it was so close that he had to run.
Yes.
And so at that point,
you kind of knew
the house was gone, right? We didn't know for sure, hadn't laid eyeballs on it, but, you know, through eyewitness accounts, we knew that was pretty much Because that was pretty much it.
Weren't some of the houses on your street safe? Like, weren't there some that survived? I was thinking there were.
Yeah. There were one or two. Okay. One or two, you know, where the siding was a little melted. I don't know how, I think the Lord downloaded this to us. We parked our vehicles in the cul-de-sac.
Right.
You know, and he saved them. That the vehicles that were in the cul-de-sac were not burnt.
And didn't you have your curriculum that you were writing in one of those vehicles?
I did. I'm just, I have all of my workbook.
Oh, I'm just looking at your website because you do so you have this work. Curriculum.
And there would have been hundreds of kids that would not have been able to have school.
Wow.
Had that van gone up, and so he saved the books. He saved the van. Wow. There's another, you know, there's another no explanation for that.
Wow.
Because every other car on the block is just obliterated. It's ash and, you know, twisted metal. And so I always tell people, like, if you have two cups of coffee, I could sit down and tell you all the miracles and wonderful things that came out of that fire.
Two cups. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, two cups. It's not a one cup of coffee story. It's definitely a two cup story.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I don't want to take too much of your time today, Deborah, but I just, I thought it'd be so fantastic to be able to actually just touch base with you a little bit. And is the community pretty well rebuilt from that time, or?
You know, pretty much. And you know what I love to see is we've got little baby pine forests that are about, you know, maybe like, you know, I don't know, I'd say maybe like 20, they're approaching maybe 20 feet now. I mean, because the trees are all coming back. And so it's kind of nice to look out and see all the new growth. I mean, it'll take a little while for it to look like it did, but it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, I really appreciate you letting me do this because, especially in the wake of, you know, the COVID-19 and everything, we've got to remember how he's been faithful to us.
Right.
We've got to, like, we got to encourage ourselves with how faithful he has been to us, you know?
Yeah.
So this is it's been good for me.
There was probably a time when you were in the middle of that whole fire thing where you felt like you would never get past it or that it would always define your life or something.
Yeah.
And yet God brought you through that. So,
it does. Yeah,
I'd love to come back sometime. It's too bad Texas is so far away from Indiana, but
hopefully. Oh, you are so welcome. You can come back anytime. Awesome. Thanks so
All
much,
right.
Katrina. You have a great day.
You do too. Thank you so much. So it wasn't until after I talked with Deborah that I found this review on Goodreads, because I'm just starting my Goodreads account there. I should have been on there long ago. So after I found that, I asked Deborah, how would she respond to this review? And she reminded me that she had a similar experience, which is also in the book, and I had already picked it for the trivia question below. So run, grab your book, and turn to page 161 if you have a copy of Inferno and Lost Pines. But I'm not going to tell that whole story here because this is getting long. But here are Deborah's comments about the woman who mocked her faith at that time. As they were both standing at the library looking at a map of the fire devastation, and then the woman walked away, and Deborah said to herself, "Lord, I didn't even have a chance to tell her all the good and amazing things you've already done for us in just these few days." And that still small voice said clearly and almost with a chuckle, "Don't worry, my dear, you said enough." Our love and trust in Jesus makes absolutely no sense to those entrenched in the world, and these are still Deborah's words. In fact, it appears like foolishness, but he uses simple testimonies of faith, like my library encounter, to confound those who assume they are wise. It scrambles their cosmic egg. So if you have read and enjoyed Inferno and also use Goodreads, I'd love to have an honest rating over there to help things out, so that it's not just one rating from an atheist, although like I said, I'm not really offended by that one. I'm just getting established over there, so I haven't managed to merge my two accounts, Katrina Hoover Books with Katrina Hoover Lee, but it's coming along. So check out Inferno in the Lost Pines at KatrinaHooverLee.com. There are some reader photos from Belize in Pennsylvania. Thank you for your orders from Arizona, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Tennessee, Virginia, Arkansas, Minnesota, and Mississippi. And here's the trivia on page 161. A woman looking at the map of the fire damage says to Deborah, "I bet all those Christians who are going around saying praise God are singing a whole different tune now." What three words come out of Deborah's mouth first? The first person to email me, Katrina@500-words.com, with the right answer receives a gift pouch of Captain Garrison coffee by mail. You may only win once. Congrats to Catherine of Maine, who got the right answer from the last trivia question. And also, just quickly, if you get a chance to go to KatrinaHooverLee.com and check out some pictures on my blog, when I started dating Marnell, his nephew Darrell said, she's the one that wrote the book about the fires. And so when I first visited their home, I took him the badge that I had brought from the Bastrop Fire Department. And just a few days ago, literally, Darrell's mom, Doris, sent us the photos, which I have on my blog. And she sewed this badge into a handmade comforter with red, blue, and matching blocks around it. It's so cute. Check those out. And come back Saturday for a commercial-free blog. I'll be talking with my friend and mentor, Sharon, from Ontario, about a project I never published and why criticism is so valuable. Thank you very much. Have a great night.